The Heat Doctor on Kerry Today, brought to you in association with Boyles of Killorglin, the home of quality.
Yeah, David Sullivan of DC Energy Solutions with us on the line again. David, good morning to you and thanks for joining us again this month.
Good morning, Jerry, and good morning to all the listeners.
Okay, we're going to start with a query in here. A listener wants to know, is it better to bleed a radiator when oil heating is on or off? Asked John in Tralee.
John, good morning. Yeah, indeed. I suppose, look, the best way to bleed radiators is to check all the radiator system is in when it's in the off position, and it'll let you know if there's any air in the system. Some of the radiator systems, Jerry, have what we call automatic top-ups for the heating side of things to make sure that there's never a drop in water or pressure, and some of them are manual. So I suppose there should be a fairly clear idea of where that is within the hot press. But look, I suppose the tip is to leave the heating system off and to bleed the radiators when it's off.
Okay, off is the safer one there. Another listener gets in touch and says she is on. She said, Carla says she's on an SEAI grant to insulate her home, or maybe she got an SEAI grant, is the proper way of saying it. They did the wraparound house, but she was denied a grant for her attic as she was told the attic was at different heights and they couldn't insulate it. Would that be correct? She finds this hard to believe.
I'm going to cautiously answer this one, Jerry, because there could be a couple of different answers to it. I don't see a situation where a grant should be refused, especially for attic insulation, if it's at different heights. It could be in relation to what we call room and roof. So, for example, like a dormer, if the space where the roof space is the ceiling of a room upstairs, for example, that's a different grant, I suppose, that would be available. But it's a difficult one to answer without, I suppose, seeing the property and understanding as to why it was refused.
The specifics
beforehand.
Of what it is, like that she's getting, what her attic looks like, or whether there's a room in the attic, for example.
Yeah. I mean, like if you look at the one-stop shop grants that are provided through the one-stop shop companies, we work Electric Ireland Superhomes, for example, there is a grant available for what we call insulating the rafters and insulating that space. Now, also equally through single measures from the SEI, there's grants available for insulating sloped rafters, sloped ceilings and things like that. But it's a tricky one. And I suppose, like I said, if that homeowner wanted to get in contact with me, I'm more than happy to discuss it with them or have a look at it. But I think there could be a few more things that I suppose are stopping that from happening. And if it was an SEI grant to insulate the home and do external insulation, was it provided through the Warmer Home Scheme or was it an individual measure? I am aware, I suppose, through the Warmer Home Scheme sometimes that when there is sloped rafters and things like that, they can't be insulated for different reasons. But look, it's a tricky one. But I suppose the big thing here, I suppose, is a lesson learned, I suppose, Jerry, as well. And I keep saying it to people is get that information first before you start. Get all the information that you can get by looking at the SEI website, by talking to the contractors, the assessors, and make sure you start on the journey knowing exactly what you can and cannot do.
Yeah. Is there a specific kind of insulation that's more commonly used, whether it's the spray foam insulation or whether it's the wool insulation that's used just on top of the ceiling? Or does that matter when it comes to SEI grants?
So the biggest thing, Jerry, is there's specific regulations that dictate that you have to meet a certain U value, which means basically you have to reach a certain level of insulation. So I suppose if you take that into account, that you have to reach a certain level of insulation, there's different types of insulation which will give you different numbers to try and achieve that. So for example, in a standard bungalow where you have what we commonly refer to as the attic space that you can hopefully get up into safely, then you would place two layers or an equivalent to 300 millimeters of wool in there to achieve a U value of 0.14. A lot of technical stuff, but basically what it means is that with that thickness of insulation, you've met the regulations, you've maximized the amount you can put in, and you're saving a lot of money, I suppose, by containing the heat within the house. Going back to the previous caller's question, I suppose what you'd have there in rafters, for example, or room and roof or dormers, is the most important thing is the air gap that's left above any type of insulation that you put into that rafter. So different thickness of rafters, different heights of roofs, different levels of houses, that all dictates that. But I suppose there is a way of achieving it because of the products that can be used. So there's a different type of wool, for example, Meetek it's called, that can be used in the rafters rather than your standard wool that would be used in the ceiling. And then underneath that, you can put an insulated slab once you have sufficient head height. So there isn't necessarily one for every job, but there is quite a common one, I suppose, with the wool that's used. But after that, then it's an assessment to make sure that you can achieve that air gap above a rafter, for example. Equally with attic spaces, that there's sufficient air coming into the building. And then after that, that you're going to achieve the U-value requirement as dictated by the SEAI in order to achieve the grant and get paid out on the grant after the works are complete.
Yeah, and I guess the question here for back to our query from listeners, the different heights in, the question is, can she insulate it anyway? Is there a problem with that, or is it just it doesn't qualify under the terms of the grant scheme?
That's why I suppose it's kind of a tricky one, Jerry. It could be the situation that the grant scheme, if it's provided through the Warmer Home Scheme, doesn't qualify for it because of different height levels, different, we'll say, works that would have to be carried out. But of course, every attic space, ceiling space or roof space within any houses, they can all be insulated. Every space can be insulated, but it's just making sure you install the correct insulation, for the roofs that are in place. And that's, I suppose, why I'm cautiously answering it with regards to what the outcome should be. And I think, it's worth assessing and looking at again and seeing as to why it was declined or what's the reason for it being declined.
Yeah, okay. All right, David, stay with us. We're going to talk more about this. We have more queries to get to for the Heat Doctor. For the Heat Doctor, get him into us now. We'll get to those and more after we take these.
The Heat Doctor on Kerry Today. Brought to you in association with Boyles of Killorglan, the home of quality.
Yeah, that is the Heat Doctor. We have a couple of comments and queries to get to. David, we'll start with this one. One listener says, how long after you apply to the SEI for a grant should you typically get a decision on your application? Caller says she applied well over 12 months ago and has heard nothing back.
We might be able to predict the lottery numbers this weekend a bit quicker, Jerry. I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. I suppose if that's an application in regards to the Warmer Home Scheme, just to break it down into three different sections, the Warmer Home Scheme at the moment has a waiting list of up to 18 months before an assessment is carried out in the house, and can take to a further 6 months before the work is carried out in the house. Quite frustrating considering the circumstances that we're facing into for 2030 and meeting 21%, I think, of our target of 50% carbon reduction. So I suppose, with 674 million allocated to the SEI from the recent budget, we'd hope to see this work moving a bit quicker in the future. But I know that there's actions in place to make that happen. Outside of that, I suppose, with the one-stop shop grants and, for example, the single measure grants, you have a situation where the grant has to be applied for before any work is carried out. I'm going to say that again, Jerry, because it's vitally important that the grants are applied for prior to anything being installed in your house. After that, once the works are complete or pending a technical assessment or post-works BER, then you're submitting your paperwork and the grant could be paid anything up to 12 weeks after that process has been accepted back in the post. Outside of that, if the house is chosen for an inspection, which under the terms and conditions and rules that apply, you are to make the house available for a registered inspector from the SEI to carry out an inspection. What they're doing is checking that the works are carried out to the standards as required. That could delay the process for a further couple of weeks, but that inspection could also be carried out after the payment is made. I know it's frustrating for people, and it is the sort of a situation that we're looking at, and I always examine it. I'm always talking to someone if they want to listen to me about it. But I suppose what they put in place through the one-stop shops, to make an example of a jury, is if there's a certain value on your works and a grant is a certain value, then the one-stop shops are paying that value, not you as a homeowner. So as such, it's being funded through the SEI and the one-stop shops. That's where there's a little bit of a victory, because you're not waiting for that payment to come back to you. Unfortunately, as contractors, we continuously are waiting for the payment to come to us, but I won't speak too much about that. It does come eventually, but I suppose that's an easier measure for homeowners to avail of. But again, I can hear the comments in the comments background, which is, why would I spend 100,000? Why would I spend 60,000? I suppose, to make an example of a recent house we looked at in a study that was done, Jerry, on an 80,000 euro investment, which would put the house up to an A standard. They're achieving grants of 33,000 euros, which they don't have to fund themselves. Yes, they have to fund 47,000 euros, but I suppose it's an investment for life into a heat pump, PV, windows and doors, a new heating system, a modern system, I suppose, that's going to make their life better going forward, or as the statistics prove, more economical to run.
Yeah, and save the money over the future period of years. Okay, another query coming in here. A listener says, is there such a thing, David, as an electric stove with a boiler? And if there is, where can it be sourced?
I've got to say directly, not to my knowledge, but go along to Boyles in Killorgland. There's always someone behind the counter. Padraig kills me every time I mention him, but he has all the information. And indeed, Denny's there too, and Pat. So there's information on that available with the wholesalers. But to my knowledge, I would suggest that there is not an electric stove directly heating water that can be used to heat radiators. It wouldn't be the most efficient way of doing things. It would be a very, 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 very inefficient system. But again, I suppose there for that homeowner, if they're considering something like that, there is bioethanol stoves, there's wood pellet stoves. I guess we want to get away from the multi-fuels and go straight to the timber log burning stoves. But again, go to Boyles in Killorgland. I know that the boys have all the information. The key thing I would suggest is bring along the size of the room that you're thinking about putting a stove in, or even the size of all the rooms within the house if you were thinking about a back boiler system going forward, and talk to your plumber after
Speaking of that, David, another query in here. Can David talk about hybrid air pumps? Are they coming on the market? This is like the hybrid electric car. I think it's if you have an air to water system, but it's linked to a gas boiler, and it can work for some homes. Would that be right?
That's I suppose, Jerry, that's it in a nutshell. I know that there's an oil boiler hybrid system, gas boiler hybrid system. There's a lot of different hybrid systems. It's like you just said, it's combining two fuel sources to give you a heat output to your house. Talk about them, I suppose you could talk about them all day long. It's known as a dual fuel system. You know, it integrates your electric heat pump, as you said, Jerry, with gas or oil, preferably gas. But again, if we're looking at these systems, they're a little bit more intricate. They have to be planned, designed and sized correctly for the installation they're going into. Now, a misconception could be here that you have an oil boiler or a gas boiler.
I'd imagine, David, you'd have to ask yourself the question, well, you know, how is this going to be better for my house than a straight just air-to-water system and a heat pump?
Well, I guess there's two things to that, Jerry. One is the upfront cost. You know, if you're looking at a dual fuel system, why are you doing that? And I suppose a lot of it at the moment, and if we look at comments from the Dáil in the last couple of weeks, and I'll stay out of the politics, but, you know, four energy companies increasing their costs for the future, and I suppose another cost that we're going to be looking forward to increase in the new year. So when I talk to people about heat pumps, they're already being fed information that their electricity is going to be through the roof. So then a hybrid system, which would use combined gas, preferably or oil, then is it a cheaper system to run, or a cheaper system to give you higher temperature within your house and run your house more efficiently? It's not as simple as let's do it this way or let's do it that way. There's a lot more conversation that I would have. But if I could back that up with one thing, Jerry, it would be if you're considering a standard heat pump, just electric supply, then, you know, PV panels and your car charger and having the system working harmoniously with the app control, and that you're optimizing your usage times at the off-peak times for your ESB. Talk to the Bill Genie. He helps me all the time with the rates that you can get, the best rates you can get. It just gives you a complete system. So if, before you go for the hybrid, why are you doing it? What's it going to be the benefit? And a lot of the hybrid systems can be used in commercial use more so than domestic. But again, I'm only talking from my experience with them. Again, a lot of the suppliers, do your homework on it. You'll be able to get all the information on it.
Yeah. Okay, Lister says, is it dangerous to put too much insulation over electric wires in the attic?
So a direct answer to that is yes. There's specific regulations with insulating in attics over cables. And that is any cable, I'm going to say a cooker cable or shower cable, bigger than 6 millimetres squared. Do you know the ones I'm talking about? Everyone has them in their house. If they have an electric shower, if they've got a rewire done, or if they've got any extra wires put in. The mains cable coming from the meter box externally to your fuse board. These cables all have to be left above the insulation. The reason for this is that they can generate heat when they're under load. Basically, what that means is that if your house is running at 100% and every kettle is boiling and every game console is turned on and everything is charging, these cables can heat up. That's the natural thing that happens with them, so they're to be kept above the insulation. Other than that, they can be housed in heat safe conduits, trunkings, etc. But I suppose the general recommendation, and it is a regulation by the SEI for the grants, is that those cables are left above any insulation you install or space left around them.
Okay, a listener gets in touch. I've underfloor heating and I've got stats controlling each area. I have the radiators turned off at the moment. Was having the radiators turned off affect the temperature of the bedrooms and therefore make the heat pump work harder, meaning higher electric bills?
So there's a combination of two systems there, if I'm interpreting that correctly, that there's a radiator system and an underfloor system. I suppose what I always say about underfloor systems is turning them off, yes, but more so I would suggest turning them down rather than off. And I suppose we're at that time of year, Jerry, if you go back to September, it was rain, cold. I'm looking out the window here, in beautiful Glenbain, the sun is shining and it's about 10, 12 degrees today. So, you know, you've got differences in temperatures, but underfloor heating, I suppose, needs that little bit longer to come up in temperature. What they are, I suppose, then doing with a radiator system combined within the house, if the underfloor heating is taking all the heat, then there's just a balancing situation that can be controlled within the house or within the system to give an equal heat to the radiators. But if it's a higher temperature that the radiators are working at, then there's a specific unit that's installed to give a higher temperature to the radiators. There shouldn't be a situation where one is taking from the other. They should both work in harmony with each other. It gives a balanced equal heat throughout the premises, which gives you more efficiency. But if you find that your radiator circuits are that bit colder, please get on to your plumber, have a look at the controls and the way it's set up and make sure that you can get equal temperature to both systems as the way I worded it, Jerry.
Yeah, David, I think the answer to this one for you, a caller says he finds it hard to sleep now because houses are too warm with the amount of insulation that's being installed. He asked, are we now overheating our homes? I'd say ventilation is the key there, or keeping your home with the control of insulation at a proper temperature.
Ventilation, the correct insulation installed, correct thermostats like the previous question. If you've got control over it and it's working efficiently for you, then you shouldn't have a situation where houses are too hot or too cold. You need that perfect balance because, Jerry, if a house is too cold, you got to heat it up. That's costing you money. If a house is too hot, you got to cool it down. That's costing you money. There's an inefficiency in there. And like you said there, ventilation is key. I just have to say that out loud, Jerry. Again, there's mechanical ventilation systems. There's a standard ventilation, a vent in the wall. We all have a window that opens. Open the window 15 minutes a day, four times a day. No matter what system you have in a house, you still have to open your windows within a house. And I suppose when you do that insulation, the regulations are in place by the SEI, by the installers, by the companies that are installed to work for you, that they have to give you a ventilation system that works in harmony with the house.
Brilliant. David, thanks a million. Brilliant as always. Thanks for talking to us this month. More queries left over. We'll get to those next month. That's David O'Sullivan of DC Energy Solutions, our heat doctor. If you have a view on that or questions for him, get him into us. We'll pass them on between now and the next time he's on with us.